looking at a passage from Numbers chapter 13 today. Numbers chapter 13, we're going to be beginning in verse 30. We're getting down to the end of that chapter, and then we're going to be picking up in the first part of chapter 14. This story takes place today. The children of Israel have left Mount Sinai. They have traveled all the way to the border of the Promised Land, and Moses has sent spies into the Promised Land. Most of you probably know that story. So the spies have gone into the Promised Land. And we're going to pick this up where the spies have now come back, and they're getting ready to give a report to the children of Israel. So it says in verse 30, it says, Caleb quieted the people before Moses and said, "We should by all means go up and take possession of it, for we will surely overcome it." But the men who had gone up with him said, "We are not able to go up against the people, for they are too strong for us." Next slide, please. So they gave out to the sons of Israel a bad report of the land which they had spied out, saying, "The land through which we have gone in spying it out is a land that devours its inhabitants, and all the people whom we saw in it are men of great size. There also we saw the Nephilim. The sons of Anak are part of the Nephilim, and we became like grasshoppers in our own sight, and so we were in their sight." Okay. How many of you have ever been persuaded by either someone's good report about something or someone's bad report about something? Okay, a lot of you have. All right. Several years ago, I had a chance to do a revival somewhere. I'm not going to say where this was, but I was at this church, and I was having supper with a couple from the church, and as we were talking, they were sharing me. They said, we seem to be having a hard time getting people in the community to want to come to our church. And said, so, you know, we've got really good programs, and we've got, you know, good people here, and we've got some really good things, but nobody, we can't get people to come. People don't want to come. So I said, well, you know, that's a problem. I said, maybe some people need to sit down and try to figure out what's going on. So the next night I had supper. The couple that was having me for supper, and you got to love people who know their strengths and weaknesses. The couple that was having me for supper, the woman said, "Look, we're not cooking for you." She said, "Because I can't cook." She said, "I don't want you to be sick when you preach, so we're going to take you out for supper." And I've said, okay, I'll eat anywhere, fine, whatever. So we went out for supper. And as we were sitting there eating, there was about two or three tables away from us, another family from that church. And they were talking loud enough that I could hear them three tables away about how much their church sucked. And they were just talking about how bad everything was, and the praise team is awful, and the music they pick is terrible, and the preacher can't preach. And they just, I mean, for like the whole time of supper, and everybody at every table around them could hear them. So when we got back to the church for revival that night, I went up to the couple I ate with the night before, and I said, "I think I found your problem. I think I may have found the problem." It's really important for us to understand the impact we have on other people through the things we say and the things that we do. And a lot of times we think it's just about, oh, it's good works and it's this, it's that, and, you know, if I'm faithful. But what we don't realize is the amount of impact we have on the people who surround us. And because of social media, it's not just the people in our direct vicinity, but it's the people that see the things we say and the things that we talk about. And it never ceases to amaze me. There tends to be, in a very general sense, there tends to be two types of churches. There are the types of churches that the people in the church go out in the community and talk about how much they love their church. And then there's the types of people who go out in the community and talk about how much they hate their church. And when you have people who communicate information like that, by the way, how many of you have ever said something and were shocked that someone actually overheard you? I never cease to be amazed when people say stuff, and it's like, well, how did you know that? Well, I heard you say it. But I was whispering. How many of you have a loud whispering voice? By the way, more of you than that have loud whispering voices. I'll go ahead and tell you. It's funny because there have been Sundays where some people have been, you know, sometimes people get in the sanctuary late, and so the doors will be closed and there'll be people standing outside the door, and we'll be on the stage and we can hear people out in the foyer. What after church has started, right? Have any of you ever experienced that? And how many of you have ever been sitting near somebody in church who was talking during church and it was disturbing you because you could hear them? I know more than that because some of you have told me. You know, you'll be sitting in church and somebody behind you will be talking and you'll be like, man, why are they talking so loud? And my wife tells me that I do not have an indoor voice. Now, that may shock some of you, but apparently, according to my wife and my daughter, I am loud all the time. It's just varying degrees of loudness. So when I'm trying to talk quietly, what I'm doing is I'm talking quietly for me, but on the normal spectrum of talking, I'm still at the loud end. And I'm not the only person in this room that's probably like that. So when we communicate information, when we share things and we talk about things, and again, people don't realize the impact they have. You know, I have known I've had kids at camp, teenage kids at camp, who told me they don't like going to church anymore. And I asked them why, and they said, well, you know, what happened is every Sunday, my parents just complain about church all the way home. And the kids are sitting in the back seat, and parents are oblivious sometimes to the fact that the kids are actually listening to them. Some of you parents will be shocked to know your kids actually do listen to you. They may not pay attention to you, but they do listen. You may not know they're listening, but sometimes, and by the way, they seem to listen to the things we don't want them to listen to. So maybe the solution to communicate to your kids is to whisper when they're around so they'll listen real carefully, because when you call their name first, they go, and they just kind of tune you out. But they do listen. People listen. So I want you to picture this. The children of Israel are poised at the promised land. And I think there's a good analogy to the number of people in our communities that are not Christians, but they're at the edge. They're standing there and they're waiting for direction. And so here are these 12 spies, and they come back from the promised land, and it's a land flowing with milk and honey. It's fantastic. And what's going to sway the decision of the Israelites? What's going to be the determining factor in whether or not they go and claim that which has been promised them by God, or whether they turn their back on the salvation of the promised land and leave? What's going to be the determining factor? And it's going to be the report of those who have already been in. And so when they get there, Caleb quiets the crowd and he says, this place is amazing. This place is great. We got to go take possession of this. Certainly God's going to give it to us. But listen to these other guys. So they gave the sons of Israel a bad report of the land which they had spied out. This land through which we've gone and is a land that devours its inhabitants. All the people we saw were giants. And there were giants there. We know that the people of Goliath, his people were there. And so we know there were some big people there. There were fortified cities there. And so they saw this and they're like, oh my goodness, we can't do this. And if we go into that land, we're going to get destroyed. So we got to warn the people. We got to tell them. And so it says that we saw the Nephilim there and we became like grasshoppers in our own sight. So at that critical moment when the children of Israel could go either way, 10 of the 12 spies gave a bad report. Now, let me ask you a question. How many of you believe that the 10 spies who gave the bad report believed everything they said? I think all of them did. I think those guys, they looked across the river into the promised land, and what they saw were obstacles. They saw problems. They saw potential disaster, and they were terrified. And so they believed everything they said. How many of you have ever heard this quote? Just because you believe something doesn't mean you should say it. One of my favorite quotes is when somebody will look at me and go, but it's the truth. If it's the truth, it's okay to say. You know what I tell that person? You either haven't been married long or you've been married to somebody that never listens to you. How many of you remember that Geico commercial with Abraham Lincoln? And his wife came out, and his wife was kind of a large woman, and she came out in that dress, and she said, do I look fat in this dress? Remember Honest Abe? He's like, Now, Abe was struggling in that commercial because he always tells the truth, oh, Honest Abe, but he knew if I answer this question wrong, it's going to be a hard time in his house. Okay, so we understand that this idea that, well, if it's the truth, I should just say it. And that's not always necessarily the case. All things are lawful, not all things are profitable. Sometimes maybe you just shouldn't say anything. But these 10 guys have given a bad report, and now the children of Israel have to decide what they're going to do. And we'll skip now to the next verse in Numbers 14, verse 1. Then all the congregation lifted up their voices and cried. And the people wept that night. All the sons of Israel grumbled against Moses and Aaron. And the whole congregation said to them, see if you've heard this before, would that we had died in Egypt. Or would that we had died in the wilderness. Why is the Lord bringing us into this land to fall by the sword? Our wives and our little ones will become plunder. Would it not be easier for us to return to Egypt? Now the census of the children of Israel puts the children of Israel somewhere over a million people. And so you've got this massive crowd of people who are waiting to take possession of the promised land, and they have been influenced to turn against God, to turn against Moses and Aaron, to turn against their leaders, and to refuse to take possession of the promised land by how many people? 10. 10 people's testimony doomed over a million to death in the wilderness. Now, I want you to take a minute and understand the impact of those people's testimony, okay? Imagine the impact of those people's testimony. 10 people. Now, if we just put the number at a million even, which is, according to the book of Numbers, is a low number. But let's just say a million even. 10 people would mean that each of those spies who gave the bad report were personally responsible for the deaths of 100,000 people. If you just put it at a million, and I'm using those numbers because that's easy math for me. Each spy is responsible for the deaths of 100,000 people if you just put the number at a million. Now, think about how you would feel on Judgment Day if you're standing there in line. And there's a person behind you, standing in line behind you. And you hear this out of their mouth. Yeah, I'm in a lot of trouble. I'm in a lot of trouble. Person, why are you in trouble? I never gave my life to the Lord. I never went to church, never did any of that stuff. I never bought into it. Why not? Well, I had a friend who was a member of the church, and they talked awful about it all the time. They complained about God, and they complained about the church, and nothing was ever good, and they complained about it all the time, and it just made me not even want to bother. I decided I wasn't even going to try. Imagine you were hearing that, and then you recognized the voice, and you knew that they were talking about you. Imagine you come to the realization on Judgment Day that it was your attitude, your negative attitude about God and about His people that had now impacted this person in a way that they were lost for eternity because you couldn't keep your mouth shut about bad stuff. You know, no, I'm just going to gripe and I'm going to complain and I'm a bad mouth and nothing's ever good enough and nothing ever makes me happy and I'm going to let everybody know it. And now this person is lost because of that. Because of your testimony, they decided, I'm not even going to mess with Jesus. Because I know a lot of people that go to church and they say the same stuff. The children of Israel hear the testimony of these 10 men. And by the way, what about the testimony of the other two? What about the testimony of the other two? Those guys gave a good testimony, right? So why ain't anybody listening to them? Because they're being drowned out by what? The negative. Does that sound familiar? You know, we talk about this. One of the things we talk about at the end of church camp every summer, we always talk about this, is that if we have 100 campers, if we have 100 campers at camp, and 99 of them have a great time, guess which parent we're going to hear from? The one whose kid didn't have a good time, right? That's who you're going to hear from. You're going to hear from. And any of you who have ever worked with the public at all know exactly how this works. People who are generally happy say what? Nothing. They don't say nothing. Why don't they say nothing? Because they're happy. Who are the people who are usually talking? The unhappy people, right? The ones who are unsatisfied with their service. I've been teaching at Pitt Community College for 20 years. 95% of my post-semester emails are not from people who made an A who said, "Mr. Woodley, you're brilliant. This was the best semester of my life. Your class was amazing. I learned so much. You're fantastic." No, that's not who emails me. I get this email. "I'm an A student, but I made a D in your class. You must be an idiot." Sometimes I get that email from the parent who says, "My kid's an A student, made a D in your class. You must be an idiot." I'm like, must be. And by the way, when you get that email, you can tell yourself all day that you're going to ignore it and you're not going to pay attention to it. But guess what? Once you see it, you don't unsee it. It stays in there and it rumbles around in your head and you try to pretend it wasn't there. But that's how it works. When we hear negative stuff, we try to ignore it, but we can't ignore it because it's in there. And because the multitude of what we hear is negative, it's because we generally don't hear from people who are happy. And so this dynamic is on display for the children of Israel. The two spies, Joshua and Caleb, come out and say, "Man, this land is amazing. We got to go take this. This is incredible. God has brought us this fantastic land. Surely we can take it." But those other 10, drowning them out. "We're going to die. This is awful. We'd have been better off if we'd have died somewhere else. This is terrible. Well, let's go back to Egypt. I'd rather be a slave in Egypt. This is awful." And you know how it is. And by the way, there's a reason. Clea and I were talking about this other night. There was a story the other day that 21 of the players on the Florida Marlins baseball team had tested positive for the COVID. Now, you know what the story didn't tell you? Guess how many of those 21 actually were showing any symptoms at all? It was like two or three. And the ones who had symptoms, they were very minor. So none of them were actually sick, but they didn't put that in the story. Well, isn't that pertinent information? So why isn't it in the story? Because bad news sells. Good news doesn't sell. Now, think about the challenge that creates for the church. The gospel is the English word for what? Good news. So what does the church do in a culture where good news doesn't sell? Well, unfortunately, a lot of us go, well, let's try bad news then. let's tell some bad news. Let's say some bad stuff. Let's just get out there and, you know, because I'm unhappy. Let's complain. Good news doesn't sell in this culture, and we know that for a fact. People don't care about good news. They don't want to hear good news. We want the dirt. By the way, did you know at one point in America, I don't think this is true anymore. I haven't checked, but at one point in America, the number one publication in the United States, anybody guess what it was? The National Enquirer. The National Enquirer was the number one publication in America. I had an aunt used to have them all. Yeah, she had, I mean, there was a stack of them. You know, you just sit there and... Abraham Lincoln and an alien had a love child. I did not know that. That's amazing. Aliens have been to visit Bill Clinton in the White House. That's not as shocking. You know, it's just stories. And people bought that stuff. Why? Because there wasn't a lot of good stuff in there. It was all bad stuff. And we love bad news. When we spread gossip, it's usually not good news, right? It's bad news. We don't, telling good news is no fun. We get to spread the bad stuff. That's what we want to tell. So as we come to this point, the children of Israel are standing at the precipice of salvation. They are standing at the border of the promised land. Just like so many people we know that are right on the edge. They are at that stage in their life where they're like, you know what? I need to make a choice. I need to make a change. Maybe this is the right time. Maybe COVID-19 is forcing people to reevaluate some things. Maybe all the unrest in America is causing people to reevaluate some things. And maybe if we would stop complaining about everything that's going on long enough, we'd realize maybe God has teed it up for us. We've got all these people who have got decisions to make, and all these crises is causing people to reevaluate. Maybe this is the moment we've been waiting for to evangelize people. Nah, let's just be negative. That's better. Well, let's see what happens. Verse 4. So they said to one another, let us appoint a leader, and let's go back to Egypt. That's a great plan, isn't it? We're going to go back to Egypt. We are going to go back to Egypt and be slaves again. That sounds like a great plan. And by the way, Moses, we're doing a recall on Moses. We're getting him out. So listen to Moses and Aaron's response in verse 5. So Moses and Aaron fell on their faces in the presence of the assembly of the congregation of the sons of Israel. And Joshua, who had been one of the spies, Joshua the son of Nun, and Caleb the son of Jephunneh, of those who had spied out the land, tore their clothes. And they spoke to all the congregation of the sons of Israel, saying, the land which we passed through to spy out is an exceedingly good land. So that the tearing of the clothes was symbolic of mourning. They're like, you guys are getting ready to make a terrible decision. It's gonna bring death. Come on, guys, listen to us. They tore their clothes and they're telling people, we've got to take this land. Next verse. If the Lord is pleased with us, then he will bring us into the land and give it to us. A land which flows with milk and honey. Only do not rebel against the Lord and do not fear the people of the land, for they will be our prey. Their protection has been removed from them, and the Lord is with us. Do not fear them. So you've got this angry mob, right? hundreds of thousands of people, and they're angry and they're mad, and they want to get rid of Moses. They want to get a new leader, and they want to go home. And now these two guys stand up, they tear their clothes, and they're pleading with the people, please listen. Please listen to us. We begged for hundreds of years to be delivered from the Egyptians, and finally God delivered us. And we saw all these amazing things he did. We saw the plagues, and we've seen the Red Sea, and we've seen the pillar of fire that's led us at night, and the cloud which has led us during the day, and we've seen God's presence at Mount Sinai, and we've got his law. We've seen all these things. And he wants so badly to give us our inheritance. And you can almost see, and by the way, there's a tremendous amount of irony as you read what the children of Israel are doing. Man, it's so symbolic of what's going on in our country right now. You get a few people to agitate the crowd, right? You get a peaceful protest, and then you get a few agitators out there to agitate and stir people up. How many of you have ever been made angry by what somebody else was saying? If you go back historically, and this falls under the old phrase of give the devil his due. You go back historically and you watch, how many of you have ever watched Adolf Hitler give a speech? If you've never watched it, I would really suggest you invest some time, sit down, and watch Hitler give a speech. Adolf Hitler didn't just practice the inflection of the speech. He practiced his hand gestures. He practiced his volume. He practiced everything. And that man could motivate a crowd like nobody in history. He'd get up and he would incite people to do things. And you're like, how does he do it? He was so incredibly gifted at his ability to get up and move people in one direction or another. Well, all of us have that gift to some degree. Maybe not large crowds. Maybe it's in how we talk to our small group of friends. But we get our group of friends together, and we get them together, and we talk to them, and we either have a chance to motivate people to do good things, or we have a chance to motivate people to do bad things. We are influencers, and we have the ability to influence people's opinions. If Christians would worry more about influencing people for Jesus, if they worried about that as much as they worry about influencing people politically or medically. I was on Facebook this week, and in the span of like 3 minutes, I saw 8 posts about hydrochlorobonoxabidim, that medicine stuff that Trump says cures to COVID, and then you got a group of doctors that say it doesn't cure to COVID, and you got another group of doctors say it does cure to COVID, and then you got all these people who got their medical degrees from Facebook U, who are online, and they are preaching to you either how valuable or invaluable a medicine they'd never heard of 2 months ago is. And I sit there and I read this stuff, and I'm like, you don't know nothing about what you're talking about. You're not a medical expert. You're not even a nurse or a doctor. You don't even play one on TV. It's like, I kind of attribute it, for those of you who grew up watching Friends, I kind of attribute this to Joey Tribbiani, who played Dr. Drake Ramore on a soap opera. I kind of take it like, would you take medical advice from Joey Tribbiani? No. And if you've never seen Friends, take my word for it. You would not take medical advice from that guy. And everybody's on Facebook. Here's my opinion on this medical drug that I've never heard of and never taken. But I know this person who posted this thing is a reliable source of bad information, and I'm going to share it with you now. Maybe if we would worry as much on Facebook and social media about telling people how God, how good God is, and encouraging people to be involved in some relationship with Him, if we would worry more about that than what people think about a drug that 99% of us are never going to take, or worry more about who's going to be Lord of your life in November instead of who's going to be president of your country. Because I got news for you. When Jesus Christ is the Lord of your life, it makes the election a little easier to swallow. Because whoever wins the election, guess what? I'm still going to heaven. Whatever. You know, whoever wins, they win. Okay. Oh, this is terrible for the country. Whichever way you go, unless you're looking up. You know, if we worried about that as much as we worry about this other stuff, but that's not what we worry about, because bad news, we want to get out and we want to get involved in the dirt. And so what happens as a result of that? Well, a million plus people are fixing to turn their back on salvation and walk right back into the destruction from which they have come. In verse 10, it says, all the congregation. So Joshua and Caleb get up, and man, they do their best. They tear their clothes, and they get after it. And they're trying so hard to turn the crowd back. It says, all the congregation said to stone them with stones. Joshua, Caleb, you know what we think of you? Everybody, let's grab a lock. Let's stone these guys right now for their opinion. For those of you who think, I thought everybody was always entitled to an opinion. Well, apparently not. Apparently this isn't a new thing. Joshua and Caleb stated their opinion, right? I think we can take the promised land. Let's kill them. Let's stone these guys for their opinion. And while we're at it, let's get Moses and Aaron. Let's stone them all. We're going to elect us a new guy, and he's going to take us back to Egypt. It says, then the glory of the Lord appeared in the tent of meeting to all the sons of Israel. Now, if we had time, we could go and we could read forward in this chapter. And I'll summarize for you what's getting ready to happen. Smile at me if you've heard this before. God tells Moses, I'm going to nuke these people. I'm going to kill them. I'm done with them. I'm going to start over with you. No. And Moses pleads for him, Lord, don't. If you kill them, after you bring them out of Egypt, the Egyptians are going to hear about it. All the peoples of this part of the world are going to hear about it. What kind of God leads his people into the wilderness to slaughter them? You can't do that. You got to be better than that. Come on now, think this through. And so he pleads with God, and God relents. But then God says this. Okay, Moses, I won't kill them right now. So here's what we're going to do. I want you to turn them around. I want you to turn them around, and we're marching out of here. Get them out of here. And what you guys are going to do is you're going to roam through the wilderness. You're going to roam through the wilderness for the next 40 years. And as I am my witness, I guess if you're God, that's the only person you can claim as your witness. As I am my witness, the only ones of the people in this crowd today who are going into the promised land are Joshua and Caleb. And the rest of them are going to die in the wilderness as judgment for their refusal to follow me. Over the next 40 years, a few at a time, a group here and there, a large group over here, some of them here, all of these people are going to die. You know where they're going to die? Because 10 men stood before them and spoke negatively and badly about the salvation that had been offered to all of Israel. 10 men were responsible for the deaths of over 1 million people. As we sit here today, we are faced with a fundamental question. As we look at our lives and our attitude towards our country, our community, our church, our relationship with Christ, as we look at all those things, we are forced to face a fundamental question. Are we going to be known on Judgment Day as people who influenced people towards Christ? Or are we going to be known as people who influenced them away from Christ? And if you don't think that church people will stand before God one day and find out that they've led more people to Satan than they have to Christ, well, you've been very blessed to be in the right church your whole life. Because I've seen it firsthand. I've sat in the restaurant and listened to the church family talk awful about their church. And then people in the church wonder, why won't anybody come here? And the answer really is, why would anybody come here? If we go out into the community and we talk terribly about our experience with God and what He's done in our life, and we don't give any kind of positive reinforcement to that relationship, then we run the risk of guiding people away from salvation. That's a terrible burden. That's a terrible burden to come to the realization someday that you actually might be the reason that some people have chosen not to fellowship with Christ and His people. As we live in this time of uncertainty and chaos, we recognize an unmistakable truth. This may be the best time to reach people for Christ that we've ever had. Let's focus our energy on that as we give witness to God and all the amazing things He's done in our life. We're going to sing our communion hymn. As we prepare to partake of the Lord's Supper together, we invite you to participate in that fellowship with Christ with us this morning.